Well, Watson, what do you make of it?
How did you know what I was doing, Holmes? I believe you have eyes in the back of your head.
I have at least a well-polished, silver-plated coffee pot in front of me.
Yeah.
But tell me, Watson, what do you make of our visitor's walking stick? Since we have been so unfortunate as to miss him and have no notion of his errand, this accidental souvenir becomes of importance. Let me hear you reconstruct the man by an examination of it.
It is ascribed to Dr. James Mortimer from his friend of the CCH in 1884. I should judge him to be a successful elderly medical man, well esteemed, since those who knew him gave him this token of appreciation.
Good. Excellent.
I think he's now a country practitioner who does a good deal of visiting on foot.
Why so?
The thick iron ferrule on the stick has worn down. See here? So it's evident he does a great amount of walking with it.
Perfectly sound. And what of the friends of the CCH?
Well, I should guess that to be the something Hunt. I should guess the doctor had rendered some medical assistance to a local hunting club, which in turn presented him with his gift.
It may be, Watson, that you are not yourself luminous, but you are a conductor of light. I confess, my dear fellow, that I am very much in your debt.
Thank you, Holmes. Let me hear your conclusion.
Well, there are certainly one or two indications upon this stick which give us the basis for several deductions.
I trust there's nothing of consequence which I have overlooked.
Now, when I said that you inspired me, Watson, I meant to be frank, that in noting your fallacies, I was occasionally guided towards the truth.
Yes.
The man is certainly a country practitioner, and he walks a good deal.
Ah, then I was right.
To that extent, yes. I would suggest, however, that the gift came from a hospital, not a hunting club.
CC Hospital. CC. Charing Cross Hospital.
Precisely, Watson. And our Dr. Mortimer, who left Charing Cross Hospital for the country, possesses a favorite dog, which is larger than a terrier and smaller than a mastiff.
How did you know that, Holmes?
Elementary, my dear Watson. Obviously, the dog has been in the habit of carrying this stick behind his master. The teeth marks are plainly visible.
Oh, yes.
The dog's jaw, as shown in the space between these marks, is too broad, in my opinion, for a terrier, and not broad enough for a mastiff. It may have been... Yes, by Jove, it is a curly-haired spaniel.
My dear fellow, how can you possibly be so sure of that? Really, Holmes, I...
For a very simple reason, that I see the dog himself on our doorstep. And there is the ring of its owner.
Mrs. Warren ushered in our visitor. A very tall, thin man with a long nose like a beak, which jutted out between two keen grey eyes, set closely together behind a pair of gold-rimmed glasses. As he entered, his eyes fell upon the walking stick in Holmes's hand.
I wasn't sure whether I'd left it here or in the shipping office. I wouldn't lose that stick for the world.
Indeed. It would be a shame to lose this gift from your friends at the Charing Cross Hospital.
Oh, yes, yes, I use it a good deal, too. How did you know my friends at Charing Cross Hospital had given me this stick?
Dr. Watson was just assisting me to a few simple deductions when you arrived, Dr. Mortimer.
Oh, yes.
Now, what can I do to assist you?
Oh, I have here, in my pocket, a manuscript.
So I noticed.
Oh, it's an old manuscript.
Early 18th century, unless it's a forgery.
Oh, how can you say that, sir?
It would be a poor expert who could not give the date of a document within a decade or so. I put it at 1730.
Well, bless me, the exact date is 1742. This family paper was committed to my care by Sir Charles Baskerville, who died suddenly and tragically some 3 months ago.
Mm. Baskerville Hall, 1742.
Yes, yes.
Appears to be a statement of some sort.
Oh, it's a legend. It's a legend which runs in the Baskerville family. In brief, gentlemen, it tells of one Hugo Baskerville, a wild, profane, and godless man, who on a certain Michaelmas Eve carried off a young girl and brought her to Baskerville Hall and locked her in an upper chamber.
Doesn't sound like a very pleasant chap, eh, Watson?
Seems like he was quite an ogre.
Oh, indeed he was. He was. Well, while Hugo and his friends drank and caroused the night away, The girl climbed down the ivy which covered the tower wall, and then made her way homeward across the moor.
Bravo, bravo!
Well, shortly after, Hugo discovered the escape, and in a fit of rage, swore that he'd give body and soul to the powers of evil if he could overtake the wench. Well, then he loosed his pack of hounds and rode off into the night. The drunken revelers also joined the hunt, following the pack in full cry in the moonlight over the moor. Finally, the band came upon a night shepherd who'd seen the fleeing girl with the hounds upon her track. And then he said, but I've seen more than that, for Hugo Baskerville passed me upon his black mare. And there ran behind him such a hound of hell as God forbid should ever be at my heels.
The plot thickens, Watson.
Yes, quite right, Holmes.
Well, and the reveller's blood turned cold. For there, galloping across the moor, was Hugo's black mare, dabbled with white froth and with trailing bridle and empty saddle. At last, the frightened band came upon the hounds, which were whimpering, of course, in a cluster. Below, in the moonlight, lay the unhappy maid, dead from fear and fatigue. Lying near her was the body of Hugo Baskerville. It wasn't these sights which raised the hair on the head of the revelers. Oh, no, 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 not at all. Standing over Hugo and plucking at his throat stood a foul thing, a great black beast, shaped like a hound, yet larger than any hound that ever mortal eye has rested on. There.
Well, Dr. Mortimer?
Well, don't you find this account interesting?
To a collector of fairy tales.
What? Well, let me give you something a little more recent. Yes. Yeah, here. Now, see, now there's an article from the Devon County Chronicle of May 14th of this year.
Yes. I'm acquainted with the facts in the death of Sir Charles Baskerville.
With the public facts.
And you have the private ones?
Yes. As the newspaper article states, Sir Charles was found dead late at night near the moor gate outside Baskerville Hall.
He apparently walked each night before retiring.
Yes, I examined the body. He was lying on his face, his arms out, his fingers dug into the ground, and his features convulsed to such an extent that I could hardly identify him. But the paper said that Barrymore, the butler, found no traces upon the ground near the body, but I did, some little distance off.
Footprints?
Footprints.
A man's or a woman's?
Mr. Holmes, they were the footprints of a gigantic hound.
I confess that the words of Dr. Mortimer sent a shudder through me. He explained that the last of the Baskervilles, Henry Baskerville, would arrive from Canada at Waterloo Station in little more than an hour. Holmes, now very much interested in the case, asked Dr. Mortimer to return the following day, bringing young Henry along, which Mortimer agreed to do.
Come in, Dr. Mortimer.
Thank you. This is Henry Baskerville, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Hello.
And Dr. Watson.
Hello. How do you do?
Very pleased to meet you, gentlemen. I understand that you think out little puzzles, Mr. Holmes.
Pray take a seat, Sir Henry. And what little puzzle can you have stumbled upon since arriving in London?
Nothing of much importance, perhaps. Only a joke, as like as not. It was this letter here, if you call it a letter, which reached me this morning at the Northumberland Hotel.
Who knew you were staying there?
Well, that's just it. No one could have known. We only decided after I met Dr. Mortimer.
It's a note pasted up from newsprint.
As you value your life or your reason, keep away from the moor. Only the word moor is written out. The rest is pasted up. From the Times, I suspect. Watson, hand me yesterday's paper.
Yes, here it is.
Very good. Ah, good. Yes, here in this front page article are the words that have been cut out and pasted together. all the words except more, which was written in. What do you make of it, Dr. Mortimer? You must allow there is nothing supernatural about this.
No, but it might very well come from someone who's convinced that the business is supernatural.
What business? It seems to me that all of you gentlemen know a great deal more than I do about my own affairs.
Be patient, Sir Henry, and you shall know all. Has anything else of interest happened to you since you have been in London?
Why, no. Unless losing a boot is something you'd think of interest.
You have lost one of your boots?
No, it's only mislaid, Sir Henry, I'm certain. What's the use of troubling Mr. Holmes with trifles of this nature?
Well, he wanted to know what had occurred.
Exactly. However foolish the incident may seem, it could reveal something. So you have lost one of your boots, you say?
Well, mislaid it, anyhow. I put them outside my door last night to be polished, and only one was there this morning. I could get no sense out of the chap who cleans them.
It seems a singularly useless thing to steal. No doubt the missing boot will reappear. Now, Dr. Mortimer, I think you could not do better than to tell Sir Henry everything you have told us about the legend of the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Oh, I've heard of the Hound ever since I was a child. It's the pet story of the family. I realize I've come into an inheritance with a vengeance. It's difficult to know whether this is a case for a policeman or a clergyman.
At any rate, there seems to be danger.
Do you mean danger from this family fiend, or do you mean danger from human beings?
Well, that's what we have to find out.
Whichever it is, I plan to go to Baskerville Hall. There is no devil in hell, and there is no man upon the earth, Mr. Holmes, who can prevent me from going to the home of my own people. And you may take that to be my final answer.
Well, Sir Henry, I am of one mind with you. There is only one provision which I ask you to make. You certainly must not go alone.
Well, Dr. Mortimer returns with me.
But he has his practice to attend to, and his house is miles away from Baskerville Hall. No, Sir Henry, you must take with you someone, a trusty man, who will always be by your side.
Oh, whom do you recommend?
Dr. Watson.
What?
If my friend could undertake it, there is no man who is better worth having at your side when you are in a tight place.
Well, this is very kind of you, Dr. Watson.
Yes.
If you will come down to Baskerville Hall and see me through, I'll never forget.
Well, I will come. With pleasure.
And you will report very carefully to me, Watson. Tell me one thing, Dr. Mortimer. Did Barrymore the butler profit at all by Sir Charles's will?
Barrymore? Well, let me see now. He and his wife received £500 each, yes. But I hope, Mr. Holmes, that you don't look with suspicious eyes upon everyone who received a legacy from Sir Charles. Well, I also had £1,000 left to me.
Indeed. And anyone else?
Well, there were several insignificant sums to individuals and gifts to a large number of charities. The residue all went to Sir Henry.
And how much was the residue?
£740,000.
When Dr. Mortimer and Sir Henry had left, Holmes went to the window and watched their carriage drive away.
Just as I suspected, Watson, they're being followed. There was another carriage waiting down the street. Come on, Watson.
We hurried out. As we pursued the two carriages, the passenger, who was following Dr. Mortimer and Sir Henry, must have recognized Holmes. For he urged his driver to speed away through the crowded street, where we lost him. Holmes, however, saw the number and instructed me to have the cabman come to him at Baker Street. It was after 5 when I found myself in the sitting room once more. The room was so filled with smoke that I thought a fire had broken out. There was Holmes in his dressing gown, coiled up in an armchair with his black clay pipe between his lips.
Caught cold, Watson?
No, it's his poisonous atmosphere.
It's a singular thing, but I find that a concentrated atmosphere helps a concentration of thought. I have not pushed it to the length of getting into a box to think, however. I have been to Devonshire, Watson.
What? Today?
In spirit. My body has remained in this armchair. Have you turned the case over in your mind?
Yes, and I find it very bewildering. Dr. Mortimer said Baskerville's footprints changed during the course of his walk, as if he had walked on tiptoe.
He only repeated what some fool had said. Why should a man walk on tiptoe?
What do you make of it?
He was running, Watson, running desperately, running for his life, running until he burst his heart and fell dead upon his face.
Running from what?
There lies our problem. I've done more than visit Devonshire in spirit, Watson. I wired there today and found that Barrymore is at Baskerville Hall. So he is not the spy who followed Sir Henry.
Ah, that must be the cabman now, Holmes. The registry office said they would send him by after 5 o'clock.
Perhaps we'll find out who was riding in number 2704, Watson, and what interest he had in Sir Henry Baskerville.
A man to see you, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Warren. Come right in, my good man.
I got a message from the head office that a gent at this address has been inquiring for number 2704. I've been driving a cab this 7 years and never had a word of complaint. I come here straight from the yard to ask you to your face what you've got against me.
I have nothing in the world against you. On the contrary, I have half a sovereign for you if you will give me a clear answer to my questions.
Oh, well, I've had a good day and no mistake. What was it you want to ask, sir?
First of all, your name and address, in case I want you again.
John Clayton, number 3 Turpey Street, the Borough.
Now, Clayton, tell me all about the fare who came and watched this house at 10 o'clock this morning and afterwards followed two gentlemen who left and went down Regent Street.
Oh, why, there's no good my telling you things. You seems to know as much as I do already. Well, the truth is that the gentleman told me he was a detective.
A detective, was he?
Well, that's what he told me. He hailed me at 9:30 in Trafalgar Square, and he gave me 2 guineas if I would do exactly what he wanted and ask no questions. So we followed the 2 gentlemen from the Northumberland Hotel to this place. Afterwards, we followed them again, until he told me to drive to Waterloo Station as hard as I could go. Well, he got out there, and he gave me my money.
Did he say anything more?
He mentioned his name.
Oh, he mentioned his name, did he? That was imprudent. And what was the name?
His name was Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Oh. A touch, Watson. An undeniable touch.
Yes.
I tell you, this time we have got a foeman who is worthy of our steel. I've been checkmated in London, Watson. I can only wish you better luck in Devonshire.
Absolutely.
Above all, see that Sir Henry avoids the moor. As the legend says, in those hours of darkness when the powers of evil are exalted.
The journey was a swift and pleasant one. In a very few hours, the brown earth had become ruddy. And red cows grazed in well-hedged fields where the lush grasses and vegetation spoke of a richer, if a damper, climate. Before long, we arrived at the hamlet of Grimpen, where we were met by a carriage to take us to Baskerville Hall. At every turn, Sir Henry seemed more delighted. To his eyes, all seemed beautiful. To me, a tinge of melancholy lay upon the countryside, which bore so clearly the mark of the waning year. Yellow leaves carpeted the lanes and fluttered down upon us as we passed. The rattle of our wheels died away as we drove through drifts of rotting vegetation. Sad gifts, as it seemed to me, for nature to throw before the carriage of the returning heir of the Baskervilles.
I've been over a good part of the world since I left the familiar features of Devon scenery, Dr. Watson, but I have never seen a place to compare with it.
Well, I never saw a Devonshire man who did not swear by his county.
That's true.
Hello, what's this over here?
Looks
who's
like
this?
A soldier watching the road.
Yeah, his rifle is poised and ready, which isn't very inviting.
Driver, what is this?
There's a convict escaped from Princeton, sir. He's been out 3 days now. And they're watching every road and station, but they've had no sight of him yet. The farmers about here don't like it, sir, and that's a fact.
I suppose they'll get a reward for any information.
Yes, sir, but it's a poor thing compared to the chance of having your throat cut.
Who is the convict, you know?
It's Selden, the Notting Hill murderer.
I remember the case well. There was one in which Holmes had taken an interest. Somewhere there on that desolate plain, lurking this fiendish man, hiding in a burrow like a wild beast. It needed but this to complete the grim suggestiveness of the barren waste, the chilling wind, and the darkling sky. Suddenly we came to a cup-like depression, patched with stunted oaks and firs which had been twisted and bent by the fury of years of storm. 2 high, narrow towers rose above the trees. The driver pointed with his whip,
Baskerville Hall?
The whole front was draped in ivy. The patch clipped bare here and there with a window or a coat of arms broke through the dark veil. From this central block rose twin towers, ancient, crenellated, and pierced with many loopholes. Barrymore and his wife met us and conducted us inside. Dr. Mortimer continued in the coach straight to his home without stopping over. That night, I drew aside my curtains before I went to bed, looked out from my window. It opened upon a grassy space which lay in front of the hall door. Beyond, two copses of trees moaned and swung in a rising wind. A half moon broke through the rifts of racing clouds. In its cold light I saw beyond the trees a broken fringe of rocks, the long, low curve of the melancholy moor. I slept very fitfully. In the very dead of the night, there came a sound to my ears, clear, resonant, and unmistakable. It was the sob of a woman, the muffled, strangled gasp of one who was torn by an uncontrollable sorrow. I sat up in bed and listened intently. For half an hour I waited with every nerve on the alert. There came no other sound save the chiming clock and the rustle of the ivy on the wall.
Well, the old place looks a bit more cheerful with the sunlight flooding in, eh, Dr. Watson?
Yes, quite right, Sir Henry. But did you happen to hear someone, a woman, I think, sobbing in the night?
Well, that's curious, for I did hear something of the sort. I waited quite a long time, but there was no more of it, so I concluded that it was all a dream.
No, I heard it distinctly, and I'm sure that it was really the sob of a woman.
Barrymore.
Yes, sir.
Barrymore, could there have been a woman sobbing in the house last evening?
There are only two women in the house, Sir Henry. One is the scullery maid who sleeps in the other wing. The other is my wife, and I can answer for it that the sound could not have come from her.
Well, it must have been the wind. Thank you, Barrymore. Well, Dr. Watson.
Yes?
I have an enormous pile of papers to go through. Why don't you look about the place?
Yes, well, I believe I'll stroll into Grimpen's, Henry, if you don't mind. I wanted some time to think over the strange events at Baskerville Hall. As I prepared for my walk, I met Mrs. Barrymore in the long corridor with the sun full upon her face. Her eyes were red, and she glanced at me from between swollen lids. So it was she who had been crying so bitterly. Why had Barrymore lied about it? Had he really been in London? What motive could he have for driving Sir Henry away from Baskerville Hall? As I walked along the grey, lonely road, thinking on these matters, I heard a voice call my name.
Dr. Watson, you will, I'm sure, excuse my presumption, Dr. Watson.
Yes, of course.
Here on the moor, we're homely folk, you know, and we don't wait for formal introductions. I'm Stapleton, of Merripit House.
Oh, of course, Dr. Mortimer told me of you. You're the naturalist.
Quite right, yes. I trust that Sir Henry is none the worse for his journey.
Oh, he's very well, thank you.
Yeah, I suppose he has no superstitious fears in this matter. You know the legend of the fiend dog which haunts the family.
Yes, I have heard it.
Yeah, it's extraordinary how credulous the peasants are about here. Any number of them are ready to swear that they've seen such a creature upon the moor. We're not far from Merripit House, Dr. Watson. Perhaps you'll spare an hour that I may have the pleasure of introducing you to my sister.
Why, that's very kind of you, sir.
It's a wonderful place, the moor. You never tire of it, you know. You can't think the wonderful secrets that it contains. It's so vast and so barren. And so mysterious.
You know it well, then.
Oh, I've been here only 2 years, but I should think there are a few men who know it better than I do.
Is it hard to know?
Very hard. You see, for example, this great plain to the north over there? You see it?
Yes, yes.
With the queer hills breaking out of it?
So they are.
Do you observe anything remarkable about that?
Well, it would be a splendid place for a gallop.
Yes, you would naturally think so. And the thought has cost several their lives before now. You notice those bright green spots scattered thickly over it?
Yes, yes, they seem more fertile than the rest.
Yes, that's the great Grimpen Mire. A false step yonder means death to man or beast. Oh, yes. Only yesterday I saw one of the moor ponies wander into it. He never came out. No, I saw his head for quite a long time, craning out of the bog hole, but it sucked him down at last.
What a horrible place. Can no one pass through it?
There are one or two paths which a very active man can take. I've found them out.
Hello. What's that?
A queer place, the moor.
No. It sounded like a moan, a howl.
Oh, well, the peasants say it's the hound of the Baskervilles calling for its prey. Yes, I've heard it once or twice before, but never quite so loud.
You don't believe in such nonsense as that, surely? What do you think is the cause of so strange a sound?
Oh, bogs make queer noises sometimes. It's the mud settling, you know, or the water rising or something.
No, that was a living voice.
Well, perhaps it was. Did you ever hear a bittern booming?
Bittern? No, I never did.
It's a very rare bird, practically extinct, in England at least. But all things are possible upon the moor. Yes, I shouldn't be surprised to learn that what we've heard is the cry of the last of the bitterns.
It's the weirdest, strangest thing I've heard in my life.
Yes, the moor's rather an uncanny place altogether. Yeah, over there now. Look at that hillside, Dr. Watson.
Yes?
What do you make of those queer stone objects?
Well, they look like sheep pens.
Ah, they're the homes of our worthy ancestors. Prehistoric man lived thickly on the moor. Neolithic man. No date, of course.
Yeah, what did he do?
Oh, he grazed his cattle on these slopes. He learned to dig for tin when the bronze sword began to supersede the stone axe. Oh, excuse me an instant, Dr. Watson. I believe that's a cyclopidae!
Suddenly, Stapleton went dashing off in hot pursuit of a small moth that fluttered across our path. To my dismay, the creature flew straight for the great mire, and my acquaintance never paused for an instant, bounding from tuft to tuft behind it, his green net waving in the air. His gray clothes and jerky, zigzag, irregular progress made him not unlike some huge moth himself. As I watched, I heard the sound of footsteps. Turned to see a woman approaching me along the path.
Go back. Go straight back to London instantly.
Why should I go back?
I cannot explain. But for God's sake, do what I ask you. Go back and never set foot upon the moor again.
But I've only just come.
Can you not tell when a warning is for your own good? Go back to London. Start tonight. Get away from this place at all costs. Shh! My brother is coming. Not a word of what I have said. Would you mind getting that orchid for me? We are very rich in orchids on the moor, though, of course, you are rather late to see the beauties of the place.
Oh, hello, Beryl. Hello. You've introduced yourselves, I can see.
Yes. Yes, I was telling Sir Henry that it was rather late for him to see the true beauties of the moor.
Why, who do you think this is?
I imagine that it must be Sir Henry Baskerville.
No, only a humble commoner, but his friend. My name is Dr. Watson.
Yes.
Oh, I'm afraid we've been talking at cross purposes. But you will come on, will you not, and see Merripit House?
We walked on, making our way to the bleak moorland house. I, wondering the whole time why Miss Stapleton had warned me to leave the moor and return to London when she took me to be Sir Henry Baskerville. Surely she could not believe the legend of the Hound of the Baskervilles. But what was the strange sound I had heard upon the lonely moor? If it was not some fearful hellhound lurking there in the great Grimpen Mire. Baskerville Hall, October 13th. My dear Holmes, My previous letters and telegrams kept you pretty well up to date as to all that has occurred in this most godforsaken corner of the world. Everywhere on the moor are the houses of these forgotten folk, prehistoric people, their graves and the huge monoliths which are supposed to have marked their temples. And as you look at their grey stone huts against the scarred hillsides, leave your own age behind you. If you were to see a skin-clad, hairy man crawl out from the low door, fitting a flint-tipped arrow onto the string of his bow, you would feel that his presence there is more natural than your own. Sir Henry, it seems, begins to display a considerable interest in our fair neighbor, Miss Stapleton, though her brother does not appear delighted at their friendliness. I have tried, as you suggested, to find out as much as possible about Sir Henry's neighbors. I have dined with Dr. Mortimer several times, but he has been excavating a barrow nearby. He's found a prehistoric skull, which fills him with great joy. One other neighbor I have met since I wrote last. This is Mr. Frankland of Laughter Hall, who lives some 4 miles to the south of us. He's an elderly man, red-faced, white-haired, and choleric. He's constantly engaged in legal battles, which seem his chief pleasure. But there are rumors that he intends to prosecute Dr. Mortimer for opening the grave of the prehistoric man without the consent of the next of kin. Now I must relate one other strange episode involving Barrymore. Sir Henry and I had both heard him walking about nights. So one night we shadowed him to a room at the end of the passage. There we found him, crouching at the window, candle in hand, his white, intent face pressed against the pane.
Barrymore, what are you doing here?
Oh, nothing, sir. It was the window, sir. Go round at night to see that they are fastened.
On the second floor?
Yes, sir. All the windows.
Look here, Barrymore. We have made up our minds to have the truth. Come now. No lies. What were you doing at that window?
I was doing no harm, sir. I was holding a candle to the window. I cannot tell you more, sir.
He must have been holding it as a signal. Let us see if there's any answer. There it is.
Yes.
Look.
No, sir. It's nothing. Nothing at all.
Move your light across the window, Watson. See, the other moves also.
Yes.
Do you deny it's a signal? Come, man, speak up.
It is not my secret, sir. I cannot tell.
Your family has lived with mine for over 100 years under this roof. And here I find you deep in some dark plot against me.
No, sir. Not against you.
Why, Mrs. Barrymore.
It is my doing, Sir Henry, all mine. My husband has nothing to do with it. He was doing it for my sake.
Doing what? Speak out, then. What does it mean?
My brother is starving on the moor. We cannot let him perish at our very gates. The light is a signal to him that food is ready for him, and his light out yonder is to show the spot to which to bring it.
Then your brother is...
escaped convict, Selden.
Is this true, Barrymore?
Yes, Sir Henry. Every word of it.
Well, I can't blame you for standing by your own wife. We'll talk further about this matter in the morning.
So, there is one of our small mysteries cleared up.
By thunder, Watson. I'm going to go out and take that man.
How far do you think it is?
Not more than a mile or two. Can't be far if Barrymore had to carry food up to him.
Now, I'll go with you.
Good. Then get your revolver and put on your boots. The sooner we start, the better. The fellow may put out his light and be off. I say, Watson, what would Holmes say about this expedition?
Darkness in which the power of evil is exalted.
My God! What's that, Watson?
I don't know. It's a sound they have on the moor. I heard it once before.
Watson, it was the cry of a hound. What do they call this sound?
Who?
The folk on the countryside.
Oh, they're ignorant people. Why should you mind what they call it?
Tell me, Watson, what do they say of it?
They say it is the cry, the hound of the Baskervilles.
A hound it was. But it seemed to come from miles away, over yonder, I think. Isn't that the direction of the great Grimpenmeyer?
Yes, it is. Stapleton was with me when I heard it last. He said it might be the calling of a strange bird.
Ha! No, it was a hound. My God, can there be some truth in all these stories? You don't believe it, do you, Watson?
No, of course not.
Ah, it's one thing to laugh about it in London, and it is quite another to stand out here in the darkness of the moor and hear such a cry as that. I don't think I'll get that cry out of my head.
Shall we turn back?
No, by thunder. We've come out to get our man, and we'll do it. We're after the convict, and a hellhound after us. Come on, we'll see it through if all the fiends of the pit were loose upon the moor.
Well, Holmes, we both saw Selden at last. Foul with mire, bristling beard, hung with matted hair. He might well have belonged to the savage race who dwelt in the burrows on the hillsides. But he spotted us almost as soon as we saw him. He dashed off at great speed like a mountain goat. But then, as we watched him leap from stone to stone, it occurred a most strange and unexpected thing. The moon was low upon my right, and the jagged pinnacle of a granite tor stood up against the lower curve of its silver disk. There, outlined as black as an ebony statue, on that shining background, I saw the figure of a man. When I attempted to point him out to Sir Henry, the figure disappeared. Baskerville Hall, October 15th. My dear Holmes, I'm afraid your instructions to me that I am never to allow Sir Henry to go out alone may become impossible if a love affair were to be added to other difficulties. My popularity would soon suffer if I were to carry out your orders to the letter. For example, yesterday, Sir Henry put on his hat and prepared to go out. Which meant, of course, I did the same.
What? Are you coming, Watson?
Well, that depends on whether you're going to the moor.
Well, yes, I am.
Well, you know what my instructions are, that I should not leave you. Especially that you should not go alone upon the moor.
My dear fellow, even Sherlock Holmes could not foresee some things which have happened since I arrived on the moor. I must go out alone. You understand me?
Well, I...
There's a good fellow.
Before I had made up my mind what to do, Holmes picked up his cane and was gone. I was in an awkward position. Fearing some danger to Sir Henry, I decided to follow him, even at the cost of irritating him. I set out at once in the direction of Merripit House. From a hill by the path, I spotted Sir Henry and Miss Stapleton, whom he had obviously met by appointment. I must say, Holmes, I felt like a cheap spy. Then I discovered I was not the only witness to this clandestine meeting, for there, much closer than I, was Stapleton, his butterfly net waving like a green banner. The couple seemed to be in earnest conversation, Miss Stapleton frequently shaking her head in strong dissent. Finally, Stapleton interrupted their private meeting. It seemed that he and Sir Henry had words. At last, Stapleton and his sister went off toward Merripit House, the naturalist practically dragging his sister along the path. Sir Henry walked slowly and dejectedly back along the path toward me.
Hello, Watson.
Henry?
Where have you dropped from? Ah, so you came after me in spite of everything.
Well, I'm deeply ashamed, Sir Henry, but I could not let you wander on the moor alone. If anything had happened...
You would have thought the middle of the moor a fairly safe place for a man to be private.
Yes.
By thunder, the whole countryside seems to have been out to see me do my wooing. And a mighty poor wooing at that. Where did you find a seat?
I was on the hill.
Quite the back row, eh? But a brother was well up front. Did you see him come out on us?
Yes, I did.
Did he ever strike you as being well, being crazy, this brother of hers.
I can't say that he ever did.
I always thought him sane enough until today. Tell me straight, Watson. Is there anything that would prevent me from making a good husband to a woman that I love?
I should say not, Sir Henry.
Well, then, what does he have against me? He can't object to my worldly position, but he will never let us be together. I know she cares for me, Watson. There's a light in a woman's eyes that speaks louder than words. But when I begin to talk seriously, well, she will have none of it. I know it's her brother, who, as you saw, descended upon us like a madman. My dear Watson, I am not old Hugo Baskerville plotting to carry off some innocent maid, but it looks like I have my own hellhound in Stapleton.
The next day after breakfast, Sir Henry called me into his study where he'd been conversing with Barrymore.
Barrymore thinks it was unfair on our part to hunt down his brother-in-law the other night after he'd told us his secret.
The poor fellow has enough to fight against without my putting more upon his track.
The man's a public danger. You only want to get a glimpse of his face to see he'll stop at nothing.
Look at Medipit House, for example, with no one but Stapleton to defend it. Watson's right. There's no safety for anyone until he's under lock and key.
Oh, no, he'll break into no house, sir. I give you my solemn word upon that. In a few days he'll be on his way to South America. I beg of you, sir, not to let the police know that he's still on the moor.
What do you say, Watson?
If he were safely out of the country, it would relieve the taxpayer of a burden.
I guess we are aiding and abetting a felony, Watson. But I don't feel as if I can give the man up. All right, Barrymore. We'll let you take care of it in your own way.
Oh, thank you, sir. Perhaps I could tell you something in return, Sir Henry.
Hmm?
Something I've never spoken of yet. It's about poor Sir Charles's death.
Ah? Do you know how he died?
No, sir. No more than you.
What, then?
I know why he was at the moor gate at that hour. It was to meet a woman.
What?
A woman?
To meet a woman?
Who? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can't give you the name, but I can give you the initials. Her initials were L.L.
Well, how do you know this, Barrymore?
Well, Sir Henry, your uncle had a letter that morning. Since there was only one, I took more notice of it than usual. It was from Coombe Tracy, and it was addressed in a woman's hand.
And, well?
Well, sir, when we were cleaning out Sir Charles's room after his death, we found part of the letter, one little slip that was not charred to pieces. It said, "Please, sir, as you are a gentleman, burn this letter, and be at the gate by 10 o'clock. It was signed by the initials L.L.
L.L.
You have no idea who L.L. is, Barrymore?
No, sir.
Very good, Barrymore. You may go. Oh, well, Watson, what do you think of this new light?
It seems to leave the darkness rather blacker than before.
If we can only trace L.L., we can clear up this whole business. There is someone who knows the facts, Watson, if we can only find her. If we can only find her.
Baskerville Hall, October 17th. My dear Holmes, all day today the rain poured down, turning the whole place into a more melancholy spot than ever. Toward evening, I put on my waterproof and walked out upon the moor. After a short stroll, I met Dr. Mortimer, returning from a call out near Foulmire. I took the occasion to inquire further into this new mystery.
Well, Dr. Watson, what are you doing wandering about the moor at night?
Stretching my legs, Dr. Mortimer, stretching my legs.
Oh, they should be quite stretched by now. Climb aboard. There, I'll drive you back to Baskerville Hall.
All right. I suppose there are a few people living within the driving distance of the hall whom you do not know, Doctor.
Oh, hardly any, I think.
Can you then tell me the name of any woman whose initials are L.L.?
Hurry up there. L.L.
Yes.
No, I can't think of anyone whose initials would be L.L. Wait a bit, though. There is Laura Lyons, and she lives in Coombe Tracy.
Who's she?
Oh, she's Franklin's daughter.
What? Old Franklin, the crank?
Yes, yes. His daughter married an artist named Lyon. But he proved to be a blackguard and deserted her. Why do you ask about Laura Lyons?
No particular reason. Something has come up. I'll tell you more later. Thank you for the lift, Mortimer.
No, not at all, not at all.
Bye.
Bye.
Later that night, Barrymore brought me my coffee into the library. I took the chance to ask him a few questions.
Cream, sir?
Yes, a dollop, please. Tell me, Barrymore, is your precious relation departed or is he still lurking out yonder?
I don't know, sir. I've not heard of him since I left out fruit for him last. And that was 2 days ago.
Yeah. Did you see him then?
No, sir. But the food was gone when next I went that way.
Then he was certainly there.
So you would think, sir. Unless it was the other man who took it.
What other man?
The other man upon the moor, sir. Seldon told me of him a week ago or more. He's in hiding, too. But he's not a convict as far as I can make out. I don't like it, Dr. Watson. I tell you straight, sir, that I don't like it.
Yes. Well, what is it that you don't like?
There's foul play somewhere. And there's black villainy brewing. To that I'll swear.
Where does this other man live?
Among the old houses on the hillside. The stone huts where the oak folk used to live. It gives me the shakes to think of him out there. And that hellhound loose upon the moor.
The next day, I went to interview Laura Lyons of Coombe Tracy. And afterwards, stopped to see a cantankerous father, hoping that the curious old goat might be able to shed some light upon this other man hiding out on the moor.
The case of Franklin versus Regina will make them regret their treatment of me. Oh, I could tell people what they're dying to know, yes? No, but I won't.
About someone poaching hereabout, no doubt, eh?
Something a good deal more important than that. What about the convict on the moor?
You don't mean to say you know where he is.
Has it never struck you that the way to catch that man is to find out where he gets his food, huh?
But how do you know he's even on the moor?
I know it because... I know it because I've seen with my own eyes the messenger who takes in his food. It's a child.
A child?
Child, yes.
Child?
Come, sir, you shall see with your own eyes where the boy goes. Take a look through this telescope.
Well, sir, it's a very formidable instrument.
By Jove, I think we're in luck. Quick, Dr. Watson, before he passes over the hill.
Where?
Oh, there.
Yes, I see.
Yes.
It's a small urchin, a little bundle upon his shoulder.
Well, am I right?
Yeah.
But not one word shall they have from me. No. They have treated me shamefully. Shamefully. Let them hunt. The fools.
Well, now... not let this chance go by without finding out who is here lurking and prowling upon the moor. And I'll have the truth by thunder. He looks into the barrel of this revolver. Now, about here, the lad disappeared. There's an old stone hut with something of a roof. That's his hiding place, I'm sure of it. I suggest you don't move a muscle, old chap. I have a revolver in my hand and I know how to use it. Oh, here he's gone. Here's some blankets and a few empty tins. What's this? It's a note. Dr. Watson has gone to Coombe Tracy. So, The secret man keeps his eyes on me as well as Sir Henry. Well, I'll just hide and wait for our friend to return.
It's a lovely evening, my dear Watson. I really think that you'll be more comfortable outside than in.
Holmes? Holmes!
Come out and please be careful with that revolver.
Why, I was never so glad to see anyone in my life. Oh, I'm more astonished.
The surprise was not all on your side. I assure you, I had no idea that you had found my retreat, Watson, until I saw a stub of your cigarette marked Bradley, Oxford Street.
Well, in the name of wonder, did you come here? What have you been doing? I thought that you were in Baker Street working on that case of blackmailing.
That was what I wished you to think. I knew the danger which you ran, Watson, and I was confident that a different perspective would help us solve this mystery.
Yeah.
So I've been here for more than a week, with a boy bringing me provisions and your reports.
Oh, really?
But where have you been, Watson?
Well, to see Mrs. Laura Lyons. And on the way back, I stopped to see her father, old Franklin.
And it was he who put you onto me, eh, Watson?
Yes. How did you know?
I have seen the light flashing upon the lens and thought he would probably spot my young boy. But tell me, Watson, what did Mrs. Lyons say about the charred note?
She denied that she had written to Sir Charles. When I quoted part of the letter, she admitted that it was she who had sent it. But she affirms that she did not keep the appointment.
Did she reveal the purpose of the proposed meeting?
Yes, she did. It seems that there was a prospect of her regaining her freedom from her blackguard husband if she could meet certain expenses.
Then why did she not go?
Because she received help in the interval from another source.
This is most important, Watson.
Yes, sir.
It fills up a gap which I had been unable to bridge in this most complex affair. You are aware, perhaps, that a close intimacy exists between this lady and the man Stapleton.
No, I did not know such an intimacy.
This puts a very powerful weapon into our hands. Now, if I could only use it to detach his wife.
His wife?
Yes. The lady who has passed here as Miss Stapleton is in reality his wife.
Good heavens, Holmes. Are you sure of what you say?
Perfectly.
It is he, then, who is our enemy. It is he who dogged us in London.
So I read the riddle.
And the warning. It must have come from her.
Exactly.
If this woman is in truth his wife, where does Mrs. Laura Lyons come in?
If she were divorced and regarded Stapleton as an unmarried man, she counted no doubt upon becoming his wife. When she learns the truth, my dear Watson, we may find the lady of service. Now, don't you think, Watson, that you are away from your charge rather long? Your place should be at Baskerville Hall.
Oh, my God. What is it?
Quiet! What is it, Watson?
There, I think. Off there.
The hound! Come, Watson, come! Great heavens! If we are too late!
Blindly, we ran through the gloom, plundering against boulders, forcing our way through gorse bushes, panting up hills and rushing down slopes, heading always in the direction of those dreadful sounds. Then, at a ridge of rocks that ended in a sheer cliff, we looked down upon some dark, irregular object, spread-eagled on the stones below.
He has beaten us, Watson! We are too late!
Oh, surely it's not the body of...
Sir Henry Baskerville!
Oh!
I'm afraid it is, Watson. I'll never forget that peculiar ruddy tweed suit.
Holmes, I shall never forgive myself for having left him to his fate. And where's the brute of a hound that drove him to his death? Stapleton, where is he?
The fellow is wary and cunning. If we make one false move, the villain may escape us yet. Hello? What's this, Watson?
What?
A beard. The man has a beard.
What? A beard?
Ah, thank God, it's not Sir Henry, Watson. It's the convict, Selden.
By Jove, Holmes. Sir Henry gave his old clothes to Barrymore. He must have passed some of them on to this poor wretch.
Then the clothes have been the poor devil's death. It is clear enough that the hound has been put on the scent from an article of Sir Henry's. The boot, which was stolen in London, in all probability. There is one very singular thing, however, Watson.
What?
How did this fugitive know that the hound was on his trail?
You heard him, no doubt.
To hear a hound upon the moor would not frighten a hardened convict into such a paroxysm of terror. No, Watson. From his cries, he must have run a long way after he knew the animal was on his track.
Oh, the greater mystery to me is why this hound should be loose tonight. Stapleton would not let it go unless he had reason to think that Sir Henry would be there.
Hello? What's this?
Ah, it's Stapleton himself, the brute.
Not a word to show your suspicions. Not a word, or my plans crumble to the ground.
Why, Dr. Watson, that's not you, is it?
Yes, it is.
But, dear me, what's this? Is somebody hurt? No, not. Don't tell me. It's our friend, Sir Henry. Who is this?
Selden, the man who escaped from prison.
Oh, dear me, what a very shocking affair. How did he die?
He appears to have broken his neck by falling over these rocks.
Oh,
my friend and I were strolling on the moor when we heard a cry.
Yes, I heard a cry, too. That was what brought me out. I was uneasy about Sir Henry.
Sir Henry?
Yes, I suggested he should come over, and when he didn't come, I naturally became alarmed for his safety. By the way, did you hear anything else besides a cry?
No. Did you?
Oh, no.
What do you mean, then?
Oh, you know the stories these peasants tell about a phantom hound. It's said to be heard at night upon the moor.
Oh, we heard nothing of the kind.
Then what's your theory of this poor fellow's death, Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
You are quick at identification.
Yes, well, we've been expecting you in these parts since Dr. Watson came down. I hope you can cast some light upon these occurrences which have puzzled us.
One cannot always have the success for which one hopes.
No.
An investigator needs facts and not legends or rumors.
We covered the body, and then Holmes and I set off to Baskerville Hall, leaving Stapleton to return alone. Looking back, we saw the figure moving slowly away over the broad moor. Behind him, at one black smudge on the silvered slope, that showed where the man was lying, would come so horribly to his end.
Mr. Holmes, what a pleasant surprise.
Good evening, Sir Henry. You're looking well, if a bit restless from your restricted life here.
I've been moping in the house all day since Dr. Watson went off in the morning. If I hadn't sworn not to go about alone, I might have had a more lively evening, for I had a message from Stapleton asking me over there.
I have no doubt that you would have had a more lively evening. Correct, Watson?
Quite right, Holmes.
I don't suppose you appreciate that we've been mourning over you as having broken your neck this very night.
How was that?
It seemed the escaped convict was wearing your tweed suit when we found him dead at the bottom of a cliff.
Another death? Have you made anything out of this tangle, Mr. Holmes? I don't know that Watson and I are much the wiser since we came down.
It's been an exceedingly difficult and most complicated business. But I think I shall be in a position to make the situation rather more clear to you before very long.
Watson and I heard the hound on the moor, so I can swear that it's not all empty superstition.
Not unless a superstition can howl.
And I think we can chain and muzzle this hound of the Baskervilles, if you will give me your help, Sir Henry.
Whatever you tell me to do, I will do.
Very good. I may ask you to do it blindly, without always asking the reason. I have no doubt,
What is it, Holmes?
Oh, excuse the admiration of a connoisseur, but these are a really very fine series of portraits.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say so. I didn't know you found time for such things.
I know what is good when I see it, and I see it now. They're all family portraits, I presume.
Every one. The portrait you're staring at, Mr. Holmes, is the wicked Hugo, who started the Hound of the Baskervilles. We are not likely to forget him. Well, I think I'll retire. Barrymore will show you your room, Mr. Holmes.
Good night, Sir Henry.
Good night, Sir Henry.
You seem to be a good deal fascinated by the portrait of Hugo Baskerville, Holmes.
Is it like anyone you know?
There is something of Sir Henry about the jaw.
Perhaps. But look at the face when I cover the hat and his long ringlets. There.
Good heavens! It's Stapleton!
Exactly, Watson. The fellow is a Baskerville. This picture has supplied us with one of our most obvious missing links. We have him, Watson. We have him. And I dare swear that before tomorrow night, he will be fluttering in our net as helpless as one of his own butterflies. A pin, a cork, and a card. And we add him to the Baker Street collection.
Ah, good morning, Holmes. Why, you look like a general who's planning a battle with his chief of staff.
That is the exact situation. Watson was asking for orders.
And so do I.
Very good. You are engaged, as I understand, to dine with our friends, the Stapletons, tonight.
I hope that you will come also. They're very hospitable people, and I'm sure that they will be glad to see you.
I fear that Watson and I must go to London.
To London?
Yes. I think that we should be more useful there at the present juncture.
Oh, well, I hope that you were going to see me through this business. The hall and the moor are not very pleasant places when one is alone.
My dear fellow, you must trust me implicitly and do exactly what I tell you. Will you tell the Stapletons that urgent business required us to be in town, but that we hope very soon to return to Devonshire?
If you insist upon it. And when do you intend to go?
Immediately after breakfast. We will drive into Coombe Tracey and there catch the train to London.
I have a good mind to go to London with you. Why should I stay here alone?
Because it is your post of duty. One more direction. I wish you to drive to Merripit House. Send back your carriage, however, and let them know that you intend to walk home.
To walk across the moor?
Yes.
But that is the very thing which you have so often cautioned me not to do.
This time you must do it. It is essential that you should do it.
All right.
And as you value your life, do not go across the moor in any direction, save along the straight path which leads from Merripit House to the Grimpen Road.
I will do just what you say.
Sir Henry was obviously uneasy about our leaving, and I was equally astounded by this program. I could not understand how we could both be absent at a moment which Holmes declared to be critical. After breakfast, we drove to Coombe Tracey. We did not board the train for London. Instead, Holmes sent the boy who had brought him his provisions when he was hiding on the moor, instructing him to send a wire to Sir Henry from Baker Street in London, which would convince him and the Stapletons that we were actually in London. Next, we called on Mrs. Laura Lyons, who, when she discovered that Stapleton's so-called sister was really his wife, freely admitted that it was Stapleton who had dictated the letter to Sir Charles Baskerville. She said that Stapleton had offered her marriage, that he had been behind the whole affair of arranging them breaking the appointment late at night with Sir Charles. Finally, we returned to the station to meet Lestrade, whom Holmes had wired to come on the 5:40 train. Together, we rode in a wagonette to Baskerville Hall, then started the walk to Merripit House across the moor.
Are you armed, Lestrade?
As long as I have my trousers, I have my hip pocket. And as long as I have my hip pocket, I have something in it.
Good. Watson and I are also ready for emergencies.
What's the game now?
A waiting game.
It is not a very cheerful place, is it?
Off there is the great Grimpen Mire. Ugh, the whole place gives me the shakes, and I've been here some time.
I see the lights of our house ahead of us.
That is Merripit House, and the end of our journey. We must all walk quietly and talk in a whisper if we are to succeed in this little ambush.
We are to wait here.
Yes, this will do.
A dense white fog was drifting slowly in our direction over the great Grimpen Mire. The moon shone upon it. It looked like a great shimmering ice field, with the heads of the distant tors as rocks borne upon its surface.
It's moving towards us, Watson.
Is that serious?
It's the one thing upon earth which could have disarranged my plans. If Sir Henry doesn't leave within the quarter hour, the path will be covered. In half an hour, we won't be able to see our hands in front of us.
That must be him leaving now.
Get ready, Lestrade.
There he is, Holmes. He doesn't look much at ease.
Listen, Watson. Look out! It's coming!
Off through the crawling bank of fog, we heard it. And suddenly, springing from the shadows, the dreadful shape appeared. A hound it was. An enormous, coal-black hound,
but not such a hound as mortal eyes have ever seen. Fire burst from its open mouth. Its eyes glowed with a smoldering glare. It was outlined in flickering flame.
Quick, Watson! Fire!
One of the first shots struck the creature, which gave a hideous howl that bounded onward. The beast sprang upon Sir Henry, hurling him to the ground. But in the same instant, Holmes fired into the creature's flank. The last howl of agony, the vicious snap in the air, rolled upon its back, 4 feet pawing furiously, then fell limp upon its side. The giant hound was dead.
Oh, my God! What was it? What in heaven's name was it?
It's dead, whatever it is. We've laid to rest the family ghost once and forever.
Look at this creature. I've never seen a hound so large.
It seems to be a cross between a bloodhound and a mastiff.
But the fire! Even now, its huge jaws seem to be dripping with a bluish flame. Oh!
Look at this! Phosphorus! So it is.
A cunning preparation of it. There is no smell which might have interfered with its power of scent. We owe you a deep apology, Sir Henry, for having exposed you to this fright.
Oh.
I was prepared for a hound, but not for such a creature as...
Trinity! But who has painted this hellhound and put him on my scent?
Stapleton!
Stapleton? But why?
I shall explain everything, Sir Henry. But first we must go back to the house. We have our case, and now we only want our man.
The shots must have told him the game was up.
It's 1,000 to 1 against our finding him at the house, but we'll search the house and make sure. Of one thing we can be certain, we shall no more hear the haunting howl of the Hound of the Baskervilles.
We returned to Merripit House. Stapleton was gone. The brute had roughly tied his wife in an upper room, fearing that she would tip his hand. Stapleton had fled into the great Grimpen Mire, where he kept the giant hound and where he had built refuge. The next morning we followed the pathway through the bog. Only once we saw a trace that someone had passed that perilous way before us. From amid a tuft of grass which bore it up out of the slime, some dark thing was projecting. It was Sir Henry's missing boot. Stapleton was never found. Did he reach that island in the heart of the great Grimpen Mire? Somewhere in the foul slime of the huge morass which had sucked him in, this cold and cruel-hearted man is forever buried.